2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Hey,
everyone. JJ Cooper, Carlos Collazo, Jeff Ponce here. We are talking our new and updated farm system talent rankings today. We're going to dive into them. We're going to look at who's at the top, who's at the bottom, and also explain how we do this. You know, I promise you, we're not just throwing darts at a board here. And we hope you enjoy this. We hope you're enjoying all the deep dives that we're doing on the podcast feed and on the YouTube channel. We're going to have looks at all of our number one prospects coming up in the next couple of weeks as well. A lot of stuff at baseballamerica.com, at Baseball America's YouTube channel, and on Baseball America's podcast feed. We hope you're enjoying it all as we get ready for the 2025 season, which is here in many ways. We have JUCO baseball now. We have D2. We're going to have Division I baseball real soon. We're going to have spring training games. It's all coming, and check it out at baseballamerica.com. Hey, Carlos. Hey, Jeff. Excited to talk about this today. I'll start off, Jeff, with you, which is the Red Sox are our number one farm system for the first time in organization history. And we'll give a mea culpa. There may have been a year or two in the 2000s where there were two and maybe they should have been one. Mookie Betts has been really good, for example, things like that. But as you look at this, how easy or how difficult was the choice, as you see it, of the Red Sox at number one?
Well, I think coming out of the season, it was a much easier choice. Roky Sasaki hadn't signed yet. They still had Kyle Teal and Braden Montgomery in this top 10. It was about as loaded of a top 10 as we've seen in a while. I think there was a case maybe that they had easily four top 50 prospects, maybe five or six, how you sort of shake out a couple of those other players. And it's funny because I think, Perales doesn't get hurt, who was a guy in the first half of last season who was really ascending, jumped onto our list, and then got injured almost immediately. It might have even ranked higher. So it was a little bit more of a question mark. They traded away players like Kyle Teal and Braden Montgomery. Roky Sasaki signed with the Dodgers. The Tiger system is also very, very good. But I think ultimately we didn't have a whole lot of fighting over whether the Red Sox were number one or not, because they have three top 15 prospects and two top five prospects, and that weighs heavily in our system rankings.
Carlos, to kind of kick it to you, same thing. Like, I mean, was this a look at this, yep, they're number one, or was this I could see the case for the Tigers, or I could see the case for the Dodgers?
Yeah, I think I kind of agree with basically everything that Jeff said there. I mean, when we run the valuations for the farm system prior to that trade that sent out Kyle Teal and Braden Montgomery, it was like a pretty significant gap between the Red Sox and whoever was next. The fact that they trade two of those players away who we view as like middle of the top 100 prospects, both of them, and they still ranked highest in our valuation model was pretty special to see. I think the fact that you have three top 15 players does a lot, but also the fact that they're hitters, I think that just gives you a lot of confidence. They're hitters, they're upper level hitters. So like, If you were to swap those with pitching prospects, maybe there would be more questions. I would imagine there'd be quite a bit more questions. But yeah, they have a really good blend of players, impact players at the top we feel very confident about, who are very close to the majors, and also really quality depth too. I think there's some teams behind that really stand out first and foremost for their depth, but lack the impact at the top. The Red Sox kind of have the best of both worlds here.
That's the thing I would say about all this is, if you look at our top 100, it's going to always give you a pretty strong indication of how our farm system talent rankings are going to line up. And I say that because, I mean, we've been doing this a long time, but also we are using the work of many others. We'll get into this in even more detail later. But top-end players, top-end prospects are more valuable than depth. When we talk about depth, depth is a little bit amorphous. When you say, okay, this team has a lot of players who could be big leaguers, that's not the same as this team has players who could be stars. Jeff, the key thing I think here with the Red Sox is, Roman Anthony was our number one prospect until Roky Sasaki signed. Christian Campbell was in that discussion as well. Like at least, in that, hey, where does he fit in this? There aren't many organizations who, especially to have two guys like that who've reached AAA, who look like they have a chance to really be impact bats.
Yeah, it's just very rare that you sort of have two quality hitters, different backgrounds, of course, in terms of a college guy who really ascended almost overnight. And then Roman Anthony, who was, you know, a talented high school player. And I think it's also funny that, you know, these were the comp picks for Xander Bogaerts and Eduardo Rodriguez, who were players that the fan base here were a little upset that both of them sort of walked and didn't get anything back. Now we're seeing they're actually getting something back. But I think kudos and credit to the Red Sox, and we've talked about this a lot. You know, Alex had a great article about it kind of early in the offseason, just about their player development on the hitting side, the sort of things they've done in terms of accentuating positive traits and adding sort of horsepower to these players when they come into the organization without sacrificing some of the things that make them good hitters, like contact, swing decisions, and things like that. I think when you look at these two players, there's, you know, cases to be made that they're kind of the one, two, you know, maybe, you know, overall. I think Roki Sasaki, because of his experience, because of the talent, I think there's a little bit of the Paul Skeens effect too, that we saw like a super talented pitcher that had some of these traits, maybe some questions about fastball shape and those sort of things that are plaguing Roki right now. But ultimately, talent like that doesn't grow on trees. So, you know, it's funny how it worked. But at the same time, I think like when we're tiering these guys out, they're sort of in the same tier as Roki for me.
I almost feel bad, to be honest, for the Tigers. The Tigers have not been a farm system that lives in this area of the rankings ever. And there, and when we look back on it, when I said there was a little bit of a mea culpa that you could look at Red Sox teams like the Mookie Betts group, or, you know, and say maybe that should have been number one. There are no mea culpas with the Tigers. There is not like you retrofit it and look back on it and say, oh, this is the year that the Tigers farm system was probably the best in baseball. No, that really hasn't happened. Baseball America has been doing this since 1984. And I would not say that there's ever been a year that you would say, oh, the Tigers in hindsight actually had the best farm system. They've really struggled to produce hitters over the years. It's gotten a lot better in recent years. That's why they rank number two here. But I say that also to say, there are years that I feel like, Carlos, that this could have been a number one farm system. Now, compared to the Red Sox, the key thing here is their top prospects, Max Clark, Kevin McGonigal, the hitters are a little further away, do not have the same production resume as an Anthony, as a Campbell. But when you throw those two guys, some solid depth, other top 100 prospects, and then you add in the topper, which is Jackson Jobe, who's the best not coming over from the MPB pitching prospect right now out there. It's a really, again, it's number two. I don't think we were really arguing it was number one, but this is the number two that there are years that this would have been number one. And I don't think we'd have felt bad about the fact that it was number one.
Yeah, with Jackson Jobe, you've got a guy who's a top 10 prospect in the game and the best pitching prospect in the game that's not named Roki Sasaki. You've got two guys in Max Clark and Kevin McGonigal that we view as, I would say, pretty safely top 30 from everyone on the staff, and we have them both in higher spots than that. Both Clark and McGonigal are guys I could see pushing into top 10 overall prospects in the game range, just given the quality of their pure hitting ability. I mean, Max Clark has a more well-rounded tool set and physicality and athleticism, but Kevin McGonigal is one of the best pure hitters in the sport at this point. You add a guy like Bryce Rayner in the draft, who I think is not the same pedigree of pure hitter as those two are. But again, he's got a really impressive frame. He's got a lot of power. He's got a big arm. And it's a player who can profile on the left side of the infield. So there's probably some hesitance from Tigers fans because they have ranked in this like 4 or 5 range in previous years. Spencer Torkelson has not been the player they expected him to be, the player that we thought he was going to be. But they've also pivoted to an entirely different demographic. Riley Green has been really capable for them. He's taken steps forward. So there is this like layering of hitters at the top of their system I'm excited about. And I would imagine next year they are going to lose Jackson Jobe, you would assume. But all three of the guys behind them, I could see them taking really solid steps forward. And I would imagine they're going to have a shot to rank at the top of this list next year as well.
I will also interject on that. Yeah, Torkelson has definitely not lived up to expectations so far, but Riley Green has to some extent. And then Tarek Skubal was part of that group as well. And you are talking about your AL Cy Young winner. So like they have the reason they were in the playoffs last year in part was because that first wave that they had is starting to pay off. Now, the key part, I think you have seen like a pretty significant change in approach as far as the drafting developing. They have a lot more hitters than they've ever had. They're definitely approaching this a little differently. We didn't even mention like they also got Thyron Lorenzo in the Jack Flaherty deal and Trey Sweeney, who's yep. their starting shortstop in the playoffs. So like they've added some significant depth there as well. Again, I would still describe this as a top heavy system. That's where we're going to go. Like if you want to say, oh, you know, but look at this other team has more depth. Yeah. But Max Clark, Jackson Jobe, Kevin McGonigal at the top of the list. Stars are more important than depth, which that's a perfect segue to our number three team on the list. Speaking of stars, we did our farm system rankings in the offseason. The first group we did, first time we did this, was for our prospect handbook, which was right before we send that off right at the end of 2024. On that one, I believe if I remember correctly, the Dodgers were 10th. They currently rank third. If you said, well, what's changed between then and now, it's that they signed Roky Sasaki. That's pretty much the extent of the changes. But Carlos, that kind of does kind of just spell out how important adding a Roky Sasaki is to a farm system that we bumped them up by 7 spots because they signed one player.
Yeah, well, you've been saying it this entire podcast, but impact talent at the top moves the needle far more than quality depth. And when Roky Sasaki, as much as a lot of people don't want to call him a prospect and are mad that he does qualify as a prospect, he is a prospect. We're ranking him. He's number one on the top 100. He adds more value in terms of the valuation formula that we're using than any player in the game. It's about
he's our number one prospect
of prospect value. And you could say that that might be light on him. So you layer that onto a farm system that had a really quality depth. There are a number of players in the Dodgers system that rank in the 50 to 150 range, as many as nearly any other organization in the game, headlined by a near proximity hitter in Dalton Rushing, who, again, I would throw him into that Kevin McGonigal range. He's probably one of the more well-rounded hitters in the minor leagues at this point. There's some defensive questions, and who knows how much he's actually going to get a shot to play at the major league level this year. But in terms of his ability as a player, he's ready. You top on just a deep and consistently strong farm system that the Dodgers have. You've got younger players in Zahir Hope that a lot of people on staff are really expecting to take a strong step forward.
Josue DePaula.
Yeah, Josue DePaula. Like, there are no shortage of names you guys can throw out here, players to be really excited about. You add a star in Roky Sasaki, that changes the picture for you. I think at this point, between the Red Sox making some trades, the Roky Sasaki addition, I really view the top end, the top three, four maybe, as pretty close. I think you could make an argument that the Dodgers should be a spot higher if you really wanted to, if you really wanted to go out on a limb for Roky. So, a significant addition, and the Dodgers stay inside this top 10 range pretty safely for us.
I would say Carlos is saying that not just to try to get more comments in our YouTube comments, although that will lead to it, because we're going to have people yelling at us, you know, about, oh, you know, and by the way, the funny part of that is we get yelled at about how we put the Dodgers number one every year. And by the way, the last time that we ranked the Dodgers number one in our farm system rankings was 2016. And that was Seager, Bellinger, Urias. That one holds up.
There are three teams, if you look at our all-time org talent rankings, three teams that have an average inside the top 10. The Rays are first at 8.3. The Dodgers are second at 9.3. And the Braves are third at 9.6. So these are just organizations that seem to consistently run out really high-quality farms.
But before I get to you, Jeff, the one point I wanted to make on this, because I want to just add this about Roky Sasaki, because we do get the comments say, why do you rank him as a prospect? He is coming over. He does not meet the foreign professional standards. Our rule is, if you're a foreign pro, Yamamoto last year did not rank in our top 100. This year, Hyesung Kim does not rank the Dodgers sign. They don't rank. They came over and were able to sign major league contracts. Roky Sasaki, yes, I know he has spent multiple years in Japan as a pro, but by MLB standards, he is not allowed to sign a major league contract. He is on a minor league contract with an invite to spring training. He is limited to signing for a signing bonus and he is being paid right now. If he somehow didn't make the major league team, he will. He would be paid a minor league minimum salary. So players like that, and by the way, he's also, it is carved out in MLB's and MLBPA's collective bargaining agreement. If Roky Sasaki wins Rookie of the Year, he will garner the Dodgers a PPI pick. It's spelled out that way. The same way that when Yamamoto last year, he would not, because if you're a foreign pro, you're not eligible. Roky Sasaki does not meet those standards. So I did want to explain that to people. But Jeff, to kind of tie it a little further on the Dodgers, I also got to throw out there that the Dodgers also have this group of pitchers like River Ryan and all who are kind of on the shelf, but still are part of their depth.
Bless you. Well.
Let me pause so I can edit this. But the Dodgers also have some pitchers like River Ryan, like Emmett Sheehan and all, who still are part of their system, who are kind of on the shelf for another year. This is a system that, again, just the depth of it really does stand out, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the points that needs to be made when people sort of get angry about the Dodgers and they're ruining baseball, they just do a better job of identifying, acquiring, and developing than just about anybody else. When it comes to all those phases, you can argue other teams have gotten this guy or that guy to the majors, the bigger stars, whatever you want to say. But when we take a step back and we sort of look at the top of this system, they traded a player that would have been in the major leagues for 2 years already in Michael Busch last year. And they got back two players who are now top 100 prospects. Zaire Hope was what? Was he even in the Dodgers top 30 coming into the year last year? You know, or the Cubs top?
Yeah, he was in the back of it, though.
Yeah, but just in the back end, was not a guy with a ton of hype. You know, there were some scouts who had seen him, etc. He blew up this year, you know, almost immediately, you know, as a Dodger, got hurt, came back, hit again, goes to the AFL, gets even more buzz. Jackson Ferris has been a top 100 prospect for us for a little bit now, kind of on the back end of that list, up and down. You look at a trade like that, and like that's why the Dodgers are so good. You know, they have the ability to go out and sign free agents. They have the ability to get creative with contracts. They draft really well. And they have this depth of players that sometimes you have a guy like Michael Busch who for 26 other teams is probably up, maybe 29 if you think about how long he was in the system. And they're able to then target players that are maybe a little bit underrated and then bring back value. And a year later, you know, you look and you see that. River Ryan was a guy that was traded for, was it Matt Beatty? Was that who they were traded for?
The list of pitchers that they have who they've turned into something, who they were just kind of throw-ins and deals type guys is pretty impressive.
Yeah. And I mean, I think you then go and take a look at you know, Dalton Rushing, who was drafted 40th overall in that draft. If it was redrafted today, I'm sure probably goes somewhere in the first round. He's outside of, like, I said this like yesterday to somebody, but like non-Red Sox division, you can argue pound for pound that Dalton Rushing could be the best hitter in the minors, just in terms of all the things that he does really well. There's questions about what his long-term defensive home is, but just from a pure bat standpoint, he checks all the boxes. And you got a guy like DePaula that they signed in the international market. You know, he signed for what, under $500,000. They just do a really good job of scouting and identifying players and all the different inputs that they can. And that's what separates them from everybody else. It's more than just the money, you know, it really is.
That's a perfect way to lead into this, because the question we often get asked, and we're going to spell it out. People, you know, again, we don't mind that there's some, I'll speak for myself. We get some vociferous pushback on our rankings. And often I'm happy to explain it. And usually when we get done with that, it's like, okay, at least there's a logic to what you're doing. We want to explain that logic right after this quick break.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
And we're back. So if you're asking the question, how do we do this? I'm going to monologue here for a minute, and then I'll kind of let you all chime in as well. But there's a foundation to how we do this, which is that there's, I want to credit, I don't have them all in front of me because there's been multiple people who've done prospect valuation studies over the years. And what they've done, because the top 100, the Baseball America top 100 goes back to 1990. So you have a long history of being able to look at how, what kind of value do teams get out of top 100 prospects. And obviously, if you want to point to it and say, that number four prospect washed out, man, that guy was number eight, he ended up being nothing. 100% absolutely happens. We just mentioned Spencer Torkelson. Spencer Torkelson was a top 10 prospect, and Spencer Torkelson, I believe right now, has negative WAR for his career. It happens. However, if you look at the totality of it, it does have a curve. The top prospects on the top 100 are your most valuable players year in, year out. We did this, I did this piece last year about laying out, like, doesn't mean every top 100 prospect is going to be a Hall of Famer, obviously, but Hall of Famers are top 100 prospects. Since we started doing the top 100, the only Hall of Famers who are of the top 100 era who are not top 100 prospects are the two, are the relievers, Trevor Hoffman and Mariano Rivera. Billy Wagner, by the way, was, because he was a starter in the minors. We generally, it's really hard as a reliever in the minors to make the top 100. So those were the two exceptions. But every other Hall of Famer was a top 100 prospect. Okay. So if the top prospects in the top 100, the 1, 2, 3, 4, that top list produced the most, and then it kind of filters down, and really the difference between number 55 on what you get production on average and number 75, much smaller than the difference between 55 and top 10. So from that, multiple studies out there, we used the driveline formulation that they did a study a few years ago. I'll try to put the link to that, in this description. But we use that as a starting point, which is to say we have BA grades on all these players. And so then we put a dollar value on their perceived value. And by the way, when we say dollars in this case, it's just number. It's a number. We're not saying, you know, if you say, well, he's not worth $70 million now because the dollars per war is now at $11 million for a free agent versus $9 million. So it should be 85. Doesn't matter because we're putting them all on that same scale. But what that does do is if you do one of those studies, if you do look at all these studies, it's going to tell you that the way you rank at the top of these lists and the way that in reality you should is by having top of the top 100 prospects. I think that there's a couple of teams here that will spell that out really well. We talked about the Dodgers, how Roky Sasaki moved them from 10 to 3. And again, I should say, we do evaluation and then we look at it, right? So if we feel like that there's something that's not fully being encapsulated in that value, we're using the valuation to get to the top 30 prospects. Now, by 30 in any organization, the difference between the number 30 prospect in a great organization and a terrible organization value-wise is in the $1 to $2 million per player range. And as we just said, Roky Sasaki in this was worth over $70 million. So you see where it's like, we've got the best 21 to 30 in baseball isn't going to change a whole lot. That'll bump you up a little bit. However, at the top, having top guys, to give an example, the Twins are ranked 7th on our farm system rankings, right? Walker Jenkins is a top 5 prospect in the game. Without Walker Jenkins, if you just took Walker Jenkins off of the Twins, they'd be right around the middle. They'd be around 15th. Valuation-wise, we'd figure out exactly where they line up. But by the way, the other thing is as you get into the middle of this group, there's a mass of teams all around each other. So You lose Walker Jenkins, you go from 7th to like 15th. You could argue 13th. You could argue 17th. If you take Walker Jenkins and Emmanuel Rodriguez out, they'd be in the mid-20s, right? That's how valuable having top-end prospects are. And I will say, if you look at our rankings and you said this team has two top 10 prospects and they ranked 15th, we're doing it wrong, because then we don't believe in our own rankings, because a top 15 prospect by themselves is so valuable in comparison to multiple 100 range, 150, 250 prospects in the game. If the Twins wanted to trade Walker Jenkins right now, and I don't think they do, if the Tigers wanted to trade Max Clark, if the Red Sox wanted to trade, let's even say Marcelo Meyer, who's their number three prospect, but especially let's say Roman Anthony or Christian Campbell. For one, those players don't get traded. They don't. You would really struggle to find an example of a top five prospect who gets traded, because the value disparity is such, those players are more valuable to teams than a lot of solid big leaguers, because you're paying the solid big leaguer an arbitration salary or a, you know, free agent salary or whatever, or they're 2 years from free agency, all that. To give another example of this, if you just took Jackson Jobe off of the Tigers top 10, the Tigers would go from number two to somewhere in that 9, 10, 11 range. That's how important top prospects are in this. And I'm going to give one more example in this monologue, and I'm sorry for running long on this, but okay, let's look at a real-world example from recent years. In 2022, let me pull out my 2022 handbook here. In 2022, Bobby Witt Jr., Carlos Collazo, draft prospect fave, was the cover boy of our 2022 farm system prospect handbook. The Royals ranked 5th in our farm system rankings that year. And it wasn't just Bobby Witt Jr., but it was largely Bobby Witt Jr. The next year, after Witt graduated, Vinny Pasquantino, MJ Melendez, and Michael Massey also graduated. But really, the main thing being Bobby Witt, they were 29th. And you would say, well, that's a big drop. But was it worth? So was your ranking a fifth wrong? No. Look at what Bobby Witt Jr. has meant to the Royals. Having a 7+ war player is more valuable than having, I keep talking about how it's valuable to have 2 war players. True. But when you have a 7+ war player, when you have a Bobby Witt Jr., when you have a Gunnar Henderson, when you have a Julio Rodriguez, I don't know, he didn't have as good a year last year. When you have a Paul Skeens, those kind of guys, that's what makes a difference. And so, Carlos, like, as you've kind of been now part of this process for a number of years, like, do we overemphasize maybe? Or like, have you kind of, as you look at it over the years, like, okay, yeah, this, the stars versus depth argument, you know, how do you perceive it?
No, I mean, I largely perceive it as you're laying it out, because I've been doing it with you and kind of soaking up information from you and just seeing, I mean, you see how stars change an organization's trajectory and the quality depth of players. Like, it's good to have quality depth players. I think a large part of why the Dodgers have been so consistent is because they always have these quality depth players. Those types are just easier to find. They're easier to replace in a system than these stars. Like you said, the gap between whoever's number 55 on our list and whoever's 110, whoever didn't miss, like, the gap there is much smaller than the gap between whoever's 2 on our list and 25. Like, there is this descending value, and if maybe it'd just be worth like showing the valuations of our teams, but the gap between the Red Sox farm system valuation that we have, again, like, we'll make some tweaks after seeing this, it's just a good starting point, but the gap between them at 1 and the Guardians at 7 is roughly the same as the gap between the Reds at 8 and like the Rangers and Blue Jays around 20 on the list. So there's this big middle of teams where you could argue a place or two, and I think it's really defensible to do that, but stars change your team in a way that just having quality role players don't. And I think the way you laid it out basically is how I view it now. Like, you need those impact game changer types. Having a Bobby Witt Jr., you would take having a shallow farm system with Bobby Witt Jr. at the top of it over the current Rays farm system, for example. I would take that every day. Like, the Rays have a ton of really quality depth. I'd rather have Bobby Witt Jr.
Jeff, you've been doing this quite a while as well. when you look at it, like I think that was a perfect example to kind of look at this. Like I would say when it comes to top 100 caliber prospects, the Rays are our number one team in this. I would say like you could literally make an argument for 12 or 13 players on the Rays list.
I'll throw the Guardians in there too, but I agree.
And the Guardians, I would say another one. So why do they not rank higher?
I think it's just that high end. You know, we take a look at what the value is and how frequently those like top, I'll say like 3 to 5 prospects hit. My first year here doing the handbook, we had an unbelievable depth at the top. We had Adley Rutschman, who I saw last night, has the most career WAR for a catcher in his first three years in the big leagues, which is a big statement because I think we might almost feel like he's underperformed based on some of his offensive exploits over the last couple of seasons. We expected even more. We have Bobby Witt Jr., who I would say is the best player in the world, non-Shohei Ohtani division. And he's probably the only guy this year that you could even debate was sort of in that range. Certainly Aaron Judge, but it was a little bit older, doesn't play shortstop. You know, there's some things that Bobby does that Aaron, you know, at this point doesn't do. And then we had Julio Rodriguez, who had a little bit of a down year, but has been a phenomenal player and has been one of the big reasons that team made the playoffs for the first time in, you know, however many years it was at that point. So I think we go back and we look at these guys that have been top, you know, 1, 2, 3 prospects almost overall. Those guys have superstar potential, you know, Hall of Fame type of ceilings. And when we take a step back, those are the guys that year in and year out are franchise players. Those are the guys that get the $300, $400, $500 million contracts. And so I think just weighing them correctly is just so much more important. Now, that being said, producing a lot of major leaguers, having, you know, 10 to 12 players in your system who can be 50 grade or better players is really valuable, not only from supplementing your major league team throughout a season or as players walk and, you know, get old, et cetera, also just in terms of trade value. So while I do think there's a lot of value there, there is a significant difference between having 10, we'll say 51 to 150 prospects, as opposed to 2 to 3 top 20 prospects, and particularly a big difference if you have 1 or 2 top 10 prospects.
The other thing I would just add to this before we move on to our next topic is that's why we have BA grades. If you look on the top 100, we have the BA grades there. If you look on the top 30s, we have the BA grades there. What I would say about that is we kind of say that there are roughly equivalents, right? A 75 high or a 75 medium is at a different level. A 70 BA grade is at a much different level than a 55. But on top of that, you can just look in systems and it's like, okay, we always talk about the 50 high line, which is every organization should have players who grade out the equivalent of a 50 high. Those are the 55 extremes. Those are the 50 highs. Those are the 45 mediums. And we say that because, Carlos, I'll quickly kick it to you on this. You do our, you know, spearhead our draft rankings. How many players do we have in the draft every year who kind of fit in that range? Which, by the way, acknowledging that once you perform in the minors, your risk goes down. So, like, we're talking every team's going to get to draft 2 or 3 or 4 players who kind of fit in that range, right? Mm-hmm. In a normal year.
Yeah. So if we're just looking at the 50 high line from the 2024 class, we had the top 50 players in the draft basically met that. But I think your point about the BA grades is phenomenal. There are a lot of people who maybe understand that ordinal ranks can be deceiving and would rather have like tiered rankings. And I think the BA grades basically give you those tiers. So we're trying to best quantify the risk and the upside, the likely outlook of these players with the BA grades. And if you really want to get a good understanding of where we see our tier breaks in the top 100, those BA grades and understanding kind of how the score works with them is the most useful and the best way. You'll really get an understanding of like what we mean when we say the difference between 55 and 70 is almost negligible because all those guys mostly have the same grades.
Okay, so now I'm clearing out because we're going into why do we hate your team, which we get a lot of also at this time. So, Jeff, we have the Angels 30, which we had the Astros 30th in our handbook. Again, we talk about the value of top 100 prospects. The Astros, after the handbook went to the press date for it, the date that we said our transaction deadline. After that, the Astros traded Kyle Tucker, brought back Cam Smith, and they leapt over the Angels. The Angels slid to 30. I don't mind. We appreciate people care about our rankings. We got some Angels fans who are like, why do you hate us so much? We're not 30th. We should be, I got one of my favorite ones is we should be 27th or 28th, which tier wise is the same. Like we're not saying that we're not implying the precision here of saying, if you want to argue that you're 28th and we say that they're 30th. Sure. Like we'll find out in 5 years. That's if you want to say that you're 15th and we think you're 30th, then we have a real disagreement. But Jeff, looking at the back of this list, I just kind of wanted to clear out for you for a minute because you made it clear like that you had some opinions on this worth sharing.
I actually think we should have ranked the Angels probably last the last few years. It's bad development. There's no depth in this system like whatsoever. I mean, after like three or four, this system is pretty bad. The other thing when comparing him to the Astros prior to the Cam Smith trade, Smith was a big mover in our top 100. And maybe this is foolhardy because things have certainly changed in that front office, but the Astros have afforded some grace because they've done such a good job of developing. They've consistently had guys that were like mid-tier top 30 prospects that have turned into pretty solid major leaguers and contributors for them on World Series teams, playoff teams, division winning teams. That is not a culture that exists within the Angels. And I think, you know, a lot of why they weren't 30 in the handbook season was because Dana and Moore were doing a lot of heavy lifting. I think you start to go down this list and like Aldejiri is a really interesting prospect, left-handed pitcher, probably more of a back-end starter. George Klassen, you know, we'll see if it's actually something or if he's another Griff McGarry and the Phillies just struck at the right time and traded somebody with big stuff while he had some helium in his first season while he's beating up on low A guys. Certainly there was some development there, but I think there's major question marks. After that, Nelson Rada, you know, they rushed him along. I don't know that he's ever really taken the steps forward that we thought he was going to take. That's a big part of it. And, you know, I think ultimately I just don't trust the Angels to necessarily develop these guys. The other part of it is they have a lot of prospects that spend much, much, much less time in the minor leagues than any other organization. They have a really weird development path where they're really not using high A. They're not using triple A. All of their players kind of get shoved up to double A. Sometimes they're probably too advanced for double A. Other times they're not advanced enough for double A. We've seen all the guys that have been pushed up to the major leagues. And it's, you know, we'll see how it plays out in the long run, but it almost looks like panic development. Nito has certainly been, I think, a welcome surprise. We don't know how much better he would have been with maybe another, you know, 60 to 80 games in the minor leagues, just kind of cutting his teeth, maybe working on a few things. I think we all agree that Shanuel had things that he had to work on before he was called up, and it's a questionable profile. So I kind of look at that and I just don't have a great deal of faith. Caden Dana was a really good story. I thought had a really good year last year. When you look at some of the release points and stuff, he's not going to fool major league hitters the way that he was fooling minor league hitters. When you have, you know, three or four different release points that are all over the map and it's really easy to sit behind home plate and pick out what those pitches are. And, you know, if scouts are doing that and analysts are noticing it, certainly the best hitters in the world who have incredible eyes and vision and the ability to pick up spin and just nuance within, you know, a pitcher's repertoire, I think just goes so far. So when I look at this, I just feel like they're not doing a good enough job of really developing and getting the best out of these guys. It's kind of the complete opposite of the Red Sox. But beyond that, when I go down into this list, there's a lot of guys that I would view as org guys if they were in a mid-tier system that are ranked in this top 30, frankly. And I think that's sort of a bigger issue overall, is there's not a lot of depth. They have not crushed the international market the way they probably should have. They've not done as well in the draft, despite having some draft capital over the last couple of years, because they haven't been a playoff team. I think overall, we've seen this play out at the major league level. They had two of the greatest talents we've seen over the last 50 years on the same team. And they just weren't competitive because they were not able to fill in those gaps. Like we talked about with teams like the Guardians before, or the Rays, or the Mariners, where they have all this depth, they have players that can supplement and help out. That's a big problem. And it's a competitive division.
Like you said, Neto is a success story. I mean, you can see like, but that's been, it's unfortunately on the pitching side, there have been fits and starts. There's been, okay, Reed Detmers has a good year, then he has a step back. Patrick Sandoval, there's a number of guys, Griffin Canning, there's a number of guys like that. But Carlos, to kick it to you, you do our Braves list. And Braves fans, again, we're trying to give explanation on some of these things. Braves fans aren't happy because they say, well, how are you ranking the Braves so low? Which, by the way, I'm just going to kick it to you by saying, the criticism we've gotten over the years at Baseball America is, man, you guys love the Braves, which we have publicized Braves prospects for quite a while because they've had a lot of really good prospects. And they were our number one system in 2017 and 2018. And again, that holds up pretty well. Ronald Acuna, Ozzie Albies, Dansby Swanson, Max Free. We could go down Austin Riley. We could go down the list. But when you look at this farm system right now with the Braves, why do they rank as low as they do?
Yeah, it's funny. When the Braves have a lot of really good prospects, we're biased towards the Braves. And when they have fewer good prospects, we're biased against them. So that's just kind of interesting how that works. But really, I mean, the Braves are a victim of picking at the back of the first round. They're a victim of missing out on the international market for several years. And now that they've gotten their toes back into the water over the last few years, their high-end international signees have really not developed yet as they were maybe expected to, or the pedigree that came with their signings. They have been very heavy on the pitching front on the draft side. They've really targeted arms. It's worked out for them. It seems like year over year, they have pitchers who are ready to come up from the farm system and supplement the starting rotation. This year specifically, they have a couple good headliners at the top of the list. Drake Baldwin is a legitimate top 50 prospect in baseball for me. He is a big league ready catcher, very well-rounded. Maybe not the sexiest sort of profile, but he does everything at a really high level. And I'm excited to see what he's going to do. You got AJ Smith-Shawver, who a year ago, we had him in a much more aggressive spot. The 2024 season for him really showed some questions about the fastball shape, about how electric the slider was. At the same time, he made some good steps down the stretch last year with his control and command. I think his changeup has gotten better. So I'm still pretty bullish on AJ Smith-Shawver. He's young. He's athletic. He still has some time. But after that, I think with the Braves, you have a lot of pitchers in their top 10, some of whom are dealing with injury issues, J.R. Richie and Owen Murphy, both of whom, if they are healthy, I could see cases for them being maybe fringe top 100 guys, but those injury questions leave them a little bit behind now. Guys like Hurston Waldrip, who just has real starter reliever questions, strike throwing questions. And beyond Drake Baldwin, I don't know that there's a single hitter in the system that you can point to and say, hey, this guy's got a chance to be an everyday regular at the major league level. There really is a lack of bats in the system. And I would say it's not because the Braves don't develop hitters well. I think they should get a lot of credit for what they did with Michael Harris, who was a two-way player in high school. A lot of scouts preferred him on the mound at the time. The Braves were like, no, we think he can hit. And he's been a great player over the years. We did rank him in the top 50, despite some, I don't know, there is a narrative that we missed on Michael Harris, but I mean, we had him as a really quality prospect. Missed on Spencer Strider. I would love to have that one back. But I would just say for the Braves, it seems very intentional. They have drafted a lot of arms. It makes sense that they've drafted a lot of arms. Their young, established major league core was the envy of the league for years. They're kind of in their peak seasons now, so you're going to want to see them backfill some hitters in the near future. But to this point, I think the system has done what the Braves have needed it to at the major league level in helping fill some holes. At the same time, when you have this sort of fall off beyond a Drake Baldwin, I would say Jeff made the point that the Angels have a lot of like org type players in their top 30 more than some other teams. I think that's probably the case for the Braves too. Maybe some of those guys will take a step forward. They're interesting players in the system here, but Nacho Alvarez looks more like a utility type right now. He's the best hitter in the system beyond Drake Baldwin. There are both power and defensive profile questions that he's going to need to answer. He does have really impressive contact skills, but that's kind of how I'm viewing the system now.
Okay, to wrap this up, I'm looking at the bottom five here. We've got the Yankees, well, bottom six. Yankees at 25, Padres at 26, Royals at 27, Braves at 28, Astros 29, Angels at 30. Which of these systems do you think has a chance to leap up the most in the next year? I'll kind of start off because I kind of threw that question at both of y'all. And you can also answer the same thing as I do. I do think that the Yankees, to me, are the one. I know they're going to probably lose Jason Dominguez, but I feel like the Yankees had a 2024 season where pretty much almost everything that could go wrong did for a lot of their players, Henry Lalonde, Roderick Arias, guys like that, who maybe that's kind of that they got derailed, but maybe they bounce back. Maybe Chase Hampton, who may graduate, bounces back. Guys like that, where it wouldn't be surprised to me to see them not move in the top 10 next year, but move up. Jeff, who kind of jumps out from the bottom tier for you as someone who could really move up in the next year?
I'm just going to play it safe and say that AJ Preller probably identified three high school players in the draft that are going to be top 100 prospects in the next year. Yep. Because it's rinse and repeat with those guys. They trade players away. I also think that, you know, there are some rumors right now with the Padres that Michael King and Dylan Cease could be moved. If either of those players are moved, there's a chance that, you know, potential top 100 prospects or current top 100 prospects are then, you know, moved into that system, which I think really reinforces that system and allows them to have some depth that they don't necessarily have right now beyond the guys that they already drafted. Names like Mayfield. I know Peter's been kind of singing the praises behind the scenes of Cobb Hightower and others. So I just think with their track record, I'm going to bet on the Padres. I think that's probably the one I'm going to go with. I thought about Kansas City a little bit. You know, Jack maybe doesn't move as fast and maybe has a good year in the minors. And Blake Mitchell, I think, is a pretty good prospect. And they have some interesting depth, actually, in that Royals system, more so than they had a few years ago. So, but I'm going to go with the Padres just because in Preller we trust when it comes to that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I'll just
echo. What about you, Carlos? I'll
echo what Jeff said. I think he nailed it. I mean, the Padres have done this year after year. They really draft well. I think their reputation in the industry for scouting and identifying talent is near the top of the league. And on top of just their ability to find hidden gems consistently every single year, they also have two players at the top of their list in Leo DeVries and Ethan Salas, who, again, never say never because it's the Padres, but I would assume they're still eligible next year. And both of these players are young enough and talented enough that would it shock either of you to see them have a lights out 2025 season and move up into this top 10 range, the range of elite hitting prospects at premium defensive profiles that we're talking about have these just significant prospect value? It wouldn't shock me at all. Like if Leo DeVries is a top 10 prospect, top five prospect a year from now, that is infinitely like believable to me. Ethan Salas, we have right now around 30 on our top 100. If he starts hitting a little bit more, gets a little bit stronger, just has a good year performance wise. I mean, he checks every box defensively at catcher. So both those guys, I could see if nothing in the system changes, except those two taking steps forward, I think that alone could push them into a different tier without even going into everything Jeff talked about in terms of them uncovering these sleeper gems every year. They also do a great job on the international side. I mean, both Leo DeVries and Ethan Salas are guys who come from the international market, but who's going to be the international player they signed this past year that we're raving about 6 months from now?
But, well, again, there's a lot. That's why we enjoy doing this. We will update, by the way, we update our farm system rankings in season as well. We know that this is a 12-month-a-year, 365-day-a-year job. We relish that opportunity. We're going to update our top 100s. We update our top 30s. We don't do this now and say, okay, check back with us in a year. Check back with us at the end of spring training. We'll do an update. At the end of May, we do an update. July, we do a big update where basically we try to reflect a lot of the reporting that we've gotten. We'll do another one after the draft, after trade deadline. We keep this updated. That's what we do for our Baseball America subscribers. Check it out at baseballamerica.com. Check out the full farm system talent rankings, which are free, by the way, for everyone at baseballamerica.com. You can check out how we lined up your team, baseballamerica.com. For Carlos, for Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
It seems like everyone is either starting a side hustle or becoming their own boss. And you know what they're hearing a lot? It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/sell23, all lowercase. Whether you're selling Lofus or Peace Lilies, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person. Covering all sales channels, from a shop front POS system to its all-in-one e-commerce platform, Shopify even gets you selling across social media marketplaces. With their 24/7 help and extensive business course library, Shopify is ready to support your success every step of the way. Go to shopify.co.uk/sell23 to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.co.uk/sell23.